Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Woo! We are joined on this episode by a very special guest who you may hear from time to time. Baby Guess is joining us.
Yes.
Are you gonna say something, Baby Guess?
Take it away,
sir. No.
Oh, so, not on command.
But we are going to be in, actually, Baby Guess's, we are technically Guess's guests, Baby Guess's guests, because
yes.
We're broadcasting live from his nursery.
Baby Guess, thank you for hosting us today. We really appreciate it.
Also, not live, pre-recorded, but we are church drunk, and as usual, a couple of quick reminders. First, even though we have a baby with us, we might even still get a little bit foul-mouthed.
He can't speak yet, so we're safe.
We'll curse for him. And so if you're not into that, make sure that you change the channel. And in addition, we tend to be a little bit blasphemous sometimes with the things that we say and the jokes that we make about the Jesus and the Mary of Magdala and the whatnot.
Hey, we all have our own way of practicing. If heresy is not yours, you've been warned.
Yeah, so we are happy that you're here. We're Catholic. You don't have to be. We hope that you're able to enjoy it with us as we celebrate Eastertide.
Eastertide! 50 days of feasting.
Yeah, last time we broadcast, it was pre-ster, and now we have Easter. And even though it happened a week ago, this is the first time that we're doing a show in the 50 days of Easter feasting.
Yeah, we've been celebrating.
Yeah.
It's so appropriate.
I'm Guess, as always, here with my co-host Dizzy. And Diz, what are you drinking today?
Well, Church Strong family, I'm drinking a horrific mix of things that shouldn't be mixed from our dear friend, what's his name, good old Foley from Drinking with the Saints.
Michael P. Foley. Drinking with the Saints.
I felt like a lot of the cocktails that I choose are really just things I enjoy. And so I went back, because now I'm no longer in a penitential season, I feel weird.
Yeah.
So I went back and embraced the Easter Bunny cocktail.
The Easter Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
No good cocktail will be named the Easter Bunny. Let's just start with that simple fact.
Right. It's kind of like a little kid's Easter basket full of, like, fruity chocolate things got mixed up and put some vodka in it. So it's not good.
You just described so many of my Easters as a child.
I wish that's what I would do.
Candies and fruits and chocolates
and
some vodka.
No, I meant separately. Like, you blended all the delicious child candies and then poured vodka in it. All right, so you would take 1.5 ounces dark creme de cacao.
Creme de cacao.
Which somehow you have. So
yes.
So it can't be awful all the time.
Embarrassingly. It's a tiny bottle. Taking me a long time to work through it.
It's not great.
No.
I'm doing my part to help then today.
Yeah, it's bad.
Vodka, which usually I go for.
Yes.
And then, like, cherry brandy, although we use maraschino liqueur as a replacement, which is delicious.
Ah, there's Baby Guess's opinion on the Easter Bunny cocktail.
It's gross. And you're supposed to drizzle it with a chocolate syrup, which Guess, out of love of alcohol, and probably me, did not do.
We didn't have any chocolate syrup, and so instead, I crushed half of a Neapolitan JoJo from Trader Joe's over the top of your Easter Bunny.
Which sounded horrible, but was, like, the best part, because once that was gone, I'm like, oh, this is not getting better. Like, I had my little cookie topper.
Oh, trouble.
Okay, so, you know,
so
what about
that.
You?
I am drinking a tequila sunrise with mezcal, so
it's
a
beautiful
mezcal sunrise, because it is sunrise season, you know, he is risen, so let us have our sunrise cocktails.
Hallelujah.
At sunrise, maybe. And then, in addition to it being the Easter season, it's also Game of Thrones season, so a little lingering smoke with
it's
the mezcal instead of the tequila was what I was feeling. Also, I didn't have tequila to make a tequila sunrise, so I made a mezcal sunrise.
Our Easter is not as abundant as we might like it to be yet. Not yet.
If Lent is the time to, like, put in your work and repent and do all that, pray, fast, give alms, Easter is the time to just be lazy and be like, you know what? The battle has been won. The victory
Drink
is ours.
Drink what you got.
Drink what you got. Yeah. Oh, do you have a lazy daddy when it comes to cocktail
oh
making?
Oh, my goodness. I would offer you a sip, but it's unclean.
So, Diz, what are we talking about today?
We were talking about the Easter season, and actually, we didn't even check in with each other. Have you been consuming huge amounts of nuts?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even realize how nut crazy I was going to go. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to have, like, some, you know, some Reese's or something, something peanut buttery. It'll be great. I ate, like, an entire 2-pound bag of pistachios
in two sittings.
I ate a pound of pistachios at a time.
Hungry.
I just kept on going. I'm like, these are so good.
I missed you.
How you doing with your tomatoes?
Oh my gosh, I've eaten pasta. I've eaten spicy pasta. Mm-hmm. I've eaten salsa. I've eaten mole. I've eaten pizza.
You texted me that picture of your ketchup, fries and ketchup.
That was the first
Easter.
Stop. Yeah. Yes. It was a delightful little condiment reunion for me because I like condiments. Like, that was a sneaky punch, one.
Yeah.
All right. So we've been celebrating with food.
For sure. And Easter is also a time, you know, where the church hits the season of confirmations, first communions, all that kind of stuff. So we talked about how at the Easter Vigil, you get that RCIA sort of graduation ceremony. You get your baptism and confirmation, first communion all at once. But for the folks that are working through it step by step, confirmed as little baby guesses.
Baptized.
Whoa.
First order. Whoa. Restored order. Yeah. Look at him go.
That's me. I'm uber conservative when it comes to when you should be confirming your babies.
Baby guess is like way ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, you.
So baptism as a baby, and then you hit your reconciliation, which we talked about during Lent, before you get your first communion.
Photos.
Eventually get your confirmation. And those tend to be Easter season times.
Yeah, so traditionally in this country, I guess probably everywhere, Easter season, you're going to make your first communion and your confirmation if you're doing that one.
Right.
And I think especially first communion, like, draws out the, like, families, right?
Yeah.
Lots of people who don't go to church will show up to get their kid first communicized.
Right.
Like, it's time. Eat your cracker and, you know, be part of the church. We'll see you later.
Yeah.
So a while ago, listener M had written us and was kind of like delving into this with her own little children and encountered one of the least tasteful aspects of modern religious education to me. I'm showing my bias and I'm going to continue to. So it's the mass cards.
It makes baby guess really mad.
He's growling now. Yeah. Baby guess, I don't think anybody's going to make you use a mask card. Also, I just want to sidebar that this baby is fighting to get to a cocktail.
Yeah.
Toys
really,
thrown at him.
Really wants a mezcal.
Are no interest.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's this practice, right? Because people are not maybe as involved with their parish. A lot of times the First Communion programs are really big. It may not be people who are there all the time. Like, it's just this random mix of people who are practicing faithfully that you do know, people from a school.
Right.
And then also just people who are maybe coming back to the church. And it's like, you want to welcome them? It should be the thought. Maybe catechize the adults a little bit.
Right.
Nope. We just go to a punch card.
Punch card.
Punch card.
Are you going to Mass? And really, what pisses me off about this is that it's not, are you going to Mass? I mean, I'm sure there is some level of that where it's like the priests are concerned or the RCIA directors or whoever is concerned about the spiritual readiness of folks. But really, that is just a disguise for, are you putting money in the basket on Sunday?
Oh,
because why,
do you think so?
Oh, yeah. Why do we care if people go to Mass
on
Sunday?
I think it's the power trip. I think it's the rule following.
Oh,
I think it's we don't trust you to educate your children in the faith well enough on your own. And so we want you to go to Mass, and we want you to come to these classes to check our boxes.
See,
I think it's a control thing.
But when you think about the next level up, like, what is the actual purpose of Mass on Sunday? Like, why does the church say that you have to go? Because it hasn't always been that way, right? Like, and we've talked about that before. Like, traditionally it was try and get there once a year. And then it was like try and get there for Easter and Christmas. And then all of a sudden, go every single Sunday so that you can put money in the basket.
I don't think you're wrong.
Oh,
baby
I'm getting
guess
a round
is
of applause.
Clapping.
I'm
there is some familial aligning happening here. Baby guess. Stick with your Auntie Diz. Auntie Diz.
Auntie Diz.
Hi,
like,
baby.
Okay.
So no mask cards. Because I think it's also like that you're going is a big thing for the religious ed people because they get a lot of people who they never see. So I think it's sort of this like retaliatory measure of, okay, we're going to let you come, but this is what you have to do.
You have to start playing by the club rules.
Yeah, and I think if we were to give like a nicer benefit of the doubt. All right.
Oh, okay.
If we were to give a benefit of the doubt, we would say, you know, they want people to come to Mass. And it is the most important part. And how are the kids going to be familiar with receiving communion if they never go to Mass? And, like, I understand that feeling. You go to Mass. You just make a big scene in Mass, and it's great.
Yeah, it's true. But, I mean, I do. I get that. And I understand that there is, like, a, you know, like, if you want to be part of the family, then you got to show up at the family events.
Right.
You know? And I do understand that part of it. But at the same time, I think you and I are both kind of see eye to eye on this, that, like, first of all, like, issuing a punch card for whether or not people are showing up, right? Like, you would never do that for a family event, right? You would never give a punch card and say you're not in the family unless you get punched, like, three times a year or something like that to show up and hang out with us. And so that's just that seems very wrong on so many levels. And second of all, when you are talking about, like, people coming back to the church, people wanting to receive a sacrament for their child or wanting their child to receive a sacrament or something like that, that is an opportunity to just have a welcoming, open-door policy. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You want your kid to be baptized? Let's do it now. Instead of, like, let's put you through the classes. Let's make sure you've done all the preparation. Let's make sure you understand, you know, what this really means in the grand. But, like, does God care if people get baptized or receive their first communion without fully understanding, like, everything that they're doing?
No, and I think God works it out, like, a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
But I do think, like, there would be a nice way to do that where it's like, okay, this is the Sunday family mass.
Right.
If you're in the First Communion program, we have special donuts after, we have a special something that's a way to entice or encourage you or to welcome you back. I've been at parishes where religious ed happened right after or right before a mass.
Right, yeah.
So there was, like, easy, like, you know, we expect you to go and then you come to class or vice versa. But you don't need to be punching cards.
Yeah.
You're not getting a free, you know, Jesus at the end.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah, we certainly should be encouraging, like, people to participate, people to show up and really engage with the community, because that's how the community is sustained. That's how it grows. That's how it gets built up.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, in terms of requiring it and making people do it. And I guess maybe it's, in some ways, it is kind of a sad commentary on where we're at as a church and as a society, that if we did just say, that's fantastic, you're interested, let's go do it now, that wouldn't necessarily encourage participation, that people would kind of look at it as, oh, sweet, I can just go get my sacrament and then be gone. Because then the sacraments become the punch card, right?
Right.
You gotta get them all. Get your card stamped.
Get the whole set. Yeah. So that kind of kicks off this sacrament season, right? So those who have done their punch cards or the equivalent.
Right.
And
there's nothing worse than leaving Mass, like, trying to get out past the group of, like, teeny little kids that are lined up at the priest. Like, the priest is there to greet everybody that's leaving, say, hi, how you doing? Have a great Sunday. Maybe chat with folks that he knows really well from the parish. Welcome people who he hasn't seen before. And he's got a whole line of little children that are holding out their cards so that he can, like, sign off. Like, thanks for coming, Johnny.
It's just weird. It's not. So Church Drunk is officially down on mass cards.
Anti-mass card.
Boo.
Yeah.
But I do think sacrament season is super cute.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're at a parish where the kids make their sacraments at a regular mass, which is not everywhere. Some places do separate masses for the first communions. And some have it during the parish masses. And it's pretty cool if they're at the parish mass because all these little kids dress up really
cute. They're all dressed up. It's springtime. The weather's nice. Mm-hmm. The dresses are very floral. Yeah. Like, it's very, very cute to see them all. And it is, you know, we talked about at the Easter Vigil, you know, there's part of me that's like, I don't know if you guys really want to do this.
Yeah.
But there's also part of me that's like, this is fantastic. Like, this is the church growing and it's people becoming part of or more fully engaged with the community. And that's a great thing.
It's funny that you bring up that part, because for me, I do always have that trepidation for people who are going through RCIA. But these little kids are already baptized.
Yeah.
So, you know, might as well give them something instead of nothing.
I know,
right?
Like,
all right, so we already talked about photos a little bit at the things, but there is a temptation to make these, like, dress up your kids and have a show instead of a sacrament.
Oh, I've got my framed, like, First Communion photo, which was taken after, you know, like, outside of church after the Mass was done, but, like, still on the shelf at my parents' place, like, in my old bedroom.
Yeah, you want to treasure that.
Yeah, so it's definitely, like, something where... It's, and especially, you know, like, you know, you grow up in a Catholic family, and First Communion is a big day, you know. And confirmation can be in some scenarios,
you
know.
It was for me.
Yeah. I think confirmation's a little more personal than First Communion. You know, First Communion, usually yeah. it's like the parents and the families and the aunties and everybody's showing up for this First Communion for this little critter. And then confirmation tends to be a little bit more of like a personal decision as to how big of a deal it's going to
yeah.
be.
And if you have much preparation and all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about confirmation season, you know, First yes. Communion is it's a lovely thing, and there's just... You can, if you find fault with like a whole line of second graders that are like semi nervous but also excited
so
to go
cute.
Get their Jesus cracker, like that's come on, you got problems if,
yeah.
you, if you don't find that
Why
to be joyful.
Why are you here at all?
Yeah. But confirmation is actually a really interesting sacrament and a really interesting process, and the whole debate about when it should happen. The fact that like only a bishop can do it, so really
yeah.
this is a very busy season for the bishops to be like moving from parish to parish.
It might be
the
only time
the
they visit
yeah.
a particular parish. It might be the only time people who are just there for the confirmation masses
right.
would see a bishop or hear from a bishop. So
yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of pressure on them to have a good homily, to interact well with the
yeah.
community. And, you know, I've seen it done well and
right.
taken advantage of well, just like Easter or Christmas, right?
Yeah.
Where you have this chance to reach out, yeah, clap your hands
clapping.
And say, be a good bishop with a good message. Or you have the chance to be like, let me
right.
slather you with oil, pretend it's not weird, and
mm-hmm.
scold you about your mass attendance.
Or if you're
that can happen.
If you're a confirmation director, as we both have been at different times, it's an opportunity sometimes the bishop to dust off their sturdy standby confirmation homily and just give the same homily
oh, yeah.
year after year after year. And you're like, really? Come on.
Yeah.
You said the same thing at last year and the year before that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at least if it's a message that's a good one for people to hear, there's
right.
a
there's
select few
things.
People that actually hear it year after year. It just happens to be that we've both been in that club.
Personal problems.
But, yeah, I think that, you know, the fact that you know, the church is divided into these dioceses and that there's not really a rhyme or reason to it. You end up with some very large rural diocese where there's one bishop who is just jamming through like miles of road warrior status to be able to get from one parish to the next and do their confirmation. That's always kind of an interesting concept to me. Like, I think about what is the bishop... Like, how does a bishop, like, prepare for that? Like, you know, it's like an annual road trip, you
yeah.
know? And I'm sure that for some of them it's a pain. But for some it's probably, like,
it's,
an opportunity to be like...
It's the joy of the Easter season.
Screaming and crying.
Sacraments for days.
I was going to say it was going to be an opportunity for a nice little retreat. A little car
yes.
retreat. But
time to view the people
yeah.
as their shepherd.
Yeah.
I don't know. That would be an interesting question
yeah.
for bishops. Like, do they like it? Dread it? What
yeah.
are they going to... say.
But the big question that most bishops face right now is not really how do you personally prepare for this like season of confirmation. It's more about how old do you think these people should be that you're
oh,
going around
controversy.
To confirm, right? Like,
yes.
And that is a hot topic. So
right.
if you were a bishop for a day
okay.
of your local diocese, you would declare that
women are going to be bishops someday, baby. Yes. Don't give us any back talk.
He says impossible.
Impossible.
But what age do you think would be the best one for confirmation? You would say we will now be confirming at such and such an age.
You know, I'm more comfortable with it in the high school years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have like a real hard opinion about this other than I think it in my experience has been better when it's somebody of an age who knows what they want.
Oh my little guess. Little baby guess.
Who knows what they want? Like, baby guess knows what he wants,
yeah.
which is all the chords.
Some bouncing, maybe. Yeah.
And can express that. So I think under high school, you're just still a little kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I'm more comfortable with it. Freshman, sophomore, junior year,
yeah.
I don't have a big preference for 1 or 2 year preparation. I just think old enough to make your choice.
I used to be of the same
what,
mind.
Yeah, what about
I used
you?
To, I used to think that high school was actually kind of like the preferred happy window for when to do confirmation. That's when I did it, you know,
yeah,
so obviously there's some bias there. And I've worked with high school students before, and I do think that there's a lot of, you know, spiritual preparation going on. And at the time that I was thinking that was the best age, I really was like, you know, in high school you're starting to think a lot about what you don't believe in. So it's really nice and healthy to be thinking about what do you believe in. You know, it's a good counterbalance. However, I also think that, like, as I've gotten older and maybe more jaded, high school kids still aren't, they're not, like, their brains are not fully developed. They're not really making fully informed decisions. And I know that one of the things that people kind of debate is, like, you see these high school kids, they get confirmed. It's kind of like Catholic graduation, and so then they drop away afterwards.
Then they're done.
So I almost would like it to be something that is for adults. Like, you got to be 18 or older, or you got to be 21 or older, or you got to be, you know, like, out of college. Well, I guess you can't say it out of college, right? Because then that would be really, like, academically exclusive for people that don't go to college. But I'd like to see it done as an adult, I think, and not as a... Because we have nothing to offer young adults in the church anyway.
Well, there is that. I think the fear is that if you do that, you'll have a fraction of them. Which is maybe not the worst thing.
Try and tackle the ones that want it. But then
when they want... A lot of them do come back for marriage time.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
And then it's like, do they have to... Could you have an expedited confirmation program for marriage as part of your marriage prep?
Like in the or way would that be something reconciliation gets tied to First Communion? You could tie confirmation to
or is that
marriage.
Something that would push it even farther off for people? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no real great answers for this because the church has a lot of issues right now keeping people involved, and I think that's what this shows in a lot of ways.
Well, and confirmation is kind of an oddball sacrament, you know, like the a lot of them are rooted in the events of the life of Jesus, or they're rooted in different, you know, long-standing rituals and traditions. And confirmation traditionally happened at the same time as baptism.
Right, it's just like part two of baptism.
So, like, how do you even separate them? How do you differentiate? And so that's the other argument that neither of us have really made yet, that a lot of people just say, do it all at once, like do baptism and confirmation together, or do it at the same time as First Communion so that, like, when they're ready to receive Eucharist, they're fully initiated into the church.
I mean, I have no problem with that other than it does leave us with not having an adolescent rite of passage,
which is
like a human thing that we sort of need.
Yeah, we kind of need a Catholic bar mitzvah of sorts or bat mitzvah, so confirmation serves that purpose sometimes, but it doesn't necessarily serve the purpose that it's intended to, which is to, like, make people claim their faith and stick to it, you know? Because right now there's a lot of people who are confirmed Catholics who just...
Well, and to be honest, I don't think wherever you put confirmation is going to fix that.
I know. Yeah. Sad but true.
Yeah. So let us know. What do you think about the sacrament of confirmation, mass cards, and the punching thereof?
I think we should make mass cards for the grown-ups that are getting confirmed. Like, you gotta get your own butt to mass.
Oh my gosh, I
not
think there should be
do it to second
catechism
graders.
In general for the parents. I think catechesis for second graders should be like two classes and mom and dad need to do the rest because they need to be going to class, not the kids.
Well, and, you know, like, I've met a lot of folks that say that their marriage classes or, you know, like the marriage prep classes for the sacrament or the baptism classes that they did, like, they met people that were kind of at the same phase of life and they make really good friendships there. But, like, at the same time, like, just let them do it. Just let people who are ready receive these sacraments. They're a gift from God.
Amen. Yeah. So you can tell us what you think about this by emailing us at churchdrunk@gmail.com, just like Em did.
Yeah.
And she also followed up and let us know that she is passively resisting the mass cards.
Yes.
Maybe she lost one, but she's also not doing them. So
stay strong.
Be like Em. Don't do it, or let us know what you do. Yeah. You can also tweet at us. You can tweet a guest at churchdrunkpod. And on the blog, we have not yet an Easter nest, so we'll have to add some fun Easter stuff. In fact, you had an Easter trivia.
I did, actually.
That you need to share with us.
In preparing your horrid little Easter bunny cocktail.
Truth, it's still two-thirds full.
We came across a recommendation from Michael P. Foley, a redeeming recommendation, that you start off your Easter dinner during cocktail hour with a bit of champagne, because the bubbles remind us that the Lord is rising. Or has
he is risen. Alleluia.
But if possible, now he admits, you know, not everybody's going to be able to pull this off, but if it's in your budget, get a bottle of Dom Perignon, because it's named after, like, the Benedictine monk from the 1600s.
What? What?
Brother Perignon, who actually invented the méthode champenoise and actually did all of the research to be like, if you use thicker glass and a more resistant cork, you can let secondary fermentation happen in the bottle. And he did all of these practices, and when he finally got it right,
yeah.
he had his sparkling wine.
Amen.
He took a sip, and apparently, according to legend,
it's a great
called
legend.
Out, "Brothers, come quickly! I'm drinking stars."
He is my actual hero. If I was picking a confirmation name today, yeah. it would be Perignon.
So, on the great long list of things that Catholics have given us,
including
thank you, Brother Perignon,
yay.
For giving us
Method.
Champagne.
Champenois,
yeah.
Chartreuse,
yeah.
arguably tonic.
Right.
What else can we... Is there some other boozies? That would be a great list. We're going to work on that.
And don't even get me started on Gregor Mendel. All right?
Oh!
Yeah. The monk who invented genetics. Yeah, I'll take that one for 1,000, Alex.
I was sticking to alcohol created by Catholics.
Yeah. Yeah. Get drunk, study genetics. It's a good life, actually.
Thus saith the Lord.
It works for some of us.
And that brings us full circle.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. And we'll catch you again for another Eastertide episode, probably next weekish.
Mm-hmm.
Here on Church Trunk, where Baby Guest just decided to get loud and then get real quiet and has nothing to say about the end of Church Trunk. But he's waving goodbye. I was waiting for that. I knew he would wave if I kept talking.
All right.
Cheers.
Hey, happy Easter, everyone.